Welcome to Founders Gone AI. Join us as we dive into our journeys as bootstrap founders navigating the world of AI-driven products. Let's get inspired, let's get informed, and if you're ready, let's get ahead.
All right, Steve, happy to be here with you again. We were just talking before the show about, you know, your new life out on, you know, kind of in the prairie, in the farmlands, I should say, and then living in a smaller town. And you were saying kind of like how people care about you in a way that you didn't feel back in big city, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like small town vibes. I mean, everybody, I think they kind of depend on themselves, but yeah. Also they're... It's a truer community, I feel. Yeah. Like they're, you know, we were previously like super close to our neighbors, but we didn't really know them.
And like you were close physically, but not emotionally.
we were very close. And yeah. Then on the flip side, now like we're very far from our neighbors.
Right.
But like we're really close with our neighbors. Like so that's kind of the weird thing is, you know, we have our neighbor.
You know, I think that people, you know, you think about the old days of the covered wagon and stuff, you really did depend on your community in a way that we haven't needed to anymore. There were no services back then. You raised, that's the whole idea of a barn raising. You helped each other out. And, you know, I was thinking, so I ended up needing to go to the ER mm-hmm. the other day unexpectedly. And, you know, everything turned out okay. But I had some concerns about some symptoms and, we just got to go check it out. So let's go let them run tests and all this stuff. So anyway, we go to the ER local, the small town that I'm in. And, my kids, I had just picked up my kids from school and I was like, well, what am I, you know, the kids are at the ER with me and they're kind of playing and running into old people as they're trying to exit the emergency room. And I was like, this isn't going to work. So anyway, we were able to call some friends that we know, or we just knew that they'd be fine. They're in town. Mm-hmm. They're the kind of people that always help people. Called them and they're like, yeah, bring them over. No problem. They're over there. And, you know, it was amazing. Then they told people in the network in the town, and suddenly I'm getting texts from everyone in our town. That's like, hey, I hear you're in the ER. What's going on? I mean, I was telling her it was very sweet because I was like, if I lived next to a hospital, a huge massive hospital in Phoenix for 5 years, I was like a block away. Thankfully, mm-hmm. I didn't need to go there. But I remember thinking, even though I'm close, if I ever had to go and we needed somewhere to put our kids or someone to take care of our kids, there was no one, not a single person I could think of, no neighbors. We had just never been able to, like, unless you're, you know, I think church would have been a good way to meet people, but like, you know, we were at the time not going anywhere like that. And there just wasn't any way I had a few friends I had met through like a meetup, you know, that were into technology, but they were not friends that I would feel like I could call if I had an emergency.
Yeah.
It was just like, we'd just be screwed. I mean, it would have been really tough. And in this town, and it's like you're saying, people drop everything and they're just willing to help you. And, it is incredible how technology has been such a gift for us, but it's also given us such convenience to not need each other anymore. And
yeah, that is I guess I find that out here though, it is more disconnected, right? Like a lot of people still, I mean, our neighbor, you know, he comes over on his golf cart or four wheeler tractor or something. And it's
side by side or something.
Like, yeah, so it's just kind of really cool that, you know, just coming over,
that's nice.
I don't know, like they'll just walk over here, or even the, you know, it's like you could have text or something if you need help. You know, so it is interesting, like the, you know, just the general disconnected, but at the same time there's still technology, but there's something about it. It's just much slower and you're not as, like, even when people are around, like, they're not on their phones. Like, they're...
That's nice.
There's... Yeah,
they're, I can't really... They're connected to you, not to their device.
Yeah, it's like... there's also, like, something, like, very serene and, like, peaceful.
I mean, yeah.
You can see the background. Like, it's just... It's open. It's almost like... You kind of get that same feeling, like, at the mountains or like the lake or the ocean where you can't see the other side. There's just something, I don't know, there's something there where, you know, you can really be and connect with people.
Yeah, nice.
Kind of talk about, I don't know, like just anything, and you're not focused on like, oh, am I late for a meeting or.
Yeah, exactly. That's beautiful. Well, thanks for talking about that. I think that it's kind of restoring a feeling of dystopian distaste that I've been having recently where, and maybe I'm hearing more about it. I think the AI, introduction of AI a few years ago was very startling and shocking for my system. And in the past couple of days, I've gotten more of these glimpses, you know, talking to you about this kind of like, how do you merge more humanity, which is kind of what you're talking about, living in a rural area. There's more humanity out there, despite there being less people. And you're marrying the technology of your work and AI with genuine connection and all that stuff. And that's like, you're basically creating a beautiful life out there, technology and non-technology intentionally. And I was just watching with my wife, we're going to move our whole business system from Notion to Obsidian. Are you a user of Obsidian? Yeah. So we're going to move everything to Obsidian, but only because, but you know, basically we were always kind of resistant of doing that because there was not a way to easily, like there's not a way to connect and collaborate as well for each other. And so we're kind of looking at the like Obsidian Relay, I guess it's called, which is sort of like a great way of doing that. And what the guy's talking about in the video though was like, you heard of like, who makes Obsidian Relay? He was explaining this thing that I thought was a neat concept. System 3, does it ring a bell at all?
System 3.
System 3, Obsidian. Anyway, I'll see if I can explain it. System 3, next gen product. So the idea is there's three systems of thinking. See if I can find it. One is like maybe the old, let's see if I can find the
about. Oh, is it like the thinking slow and thinking fast?
Yes.
And then like a third one, I guess. Like, I don't know.
System 1 is fast intuitive thinking. I'll see if I can actually share it for those watching the video, the YouTube. So here it is. So system 1 is fast intuitive thinking. I don't know if you can see this. Basically the automatic instinctive system that handles quick reactions and gut feelings. It's fast but prone to biases. System 2 extends human capabilities beyond the other animals. It's deliberate, analytical, and it handles complex calculations and logical reasoning. So maybe that's what we've been doing the past, you know, 100 years or thousands of years. Maybe.
I always want to say we're doing more of the system 2 when a lot of times it might be.
Yeah, right, exactly. And now we're moving to system 3, which is only now made capable from AI, which is the having the best of both. A slow methodical, but limited reasoning. When we move towards system 2, we lost the fast intuitive ability, reasoning, and we kind of disconnected from that. And because of AI, we're now able to do both. And it's sort of like hopeful to me because it's the first time I'm thinking of AI as a complement more than a replacement to humans, and how power, you know, basically giving us superpowers, but not replacing the human. I think that's what we've mostly been focused on the past couple of years with the AI narrative and the media and stuff is, it's going to replace you. You're going to be doing nothing. But of course, most of us enjoy doing stuff. We enjoy working.
There's value. And I think it's something everybody likes to talk about is you're going to get replaced. But think about like when the train came along, when the cars came along, when the typewriters came along, right? Like there are classes of jobs that may no longer make sense, but there's also, it almost seems like people are getting back to more like crafty kind of things, like real, like things they make with their hands, like things that are real.
Yeah.
I don't know that I find myself like wanting to get into woodworking. I suppose you're supposed to do that. Like when you get older, you're supposed to just get into woodworking. I haven't crazed yet. But like,
you have a bunch of guitars behind you, by the way.
I do. Yeah, actually, I've been getting in, the house came with a piano because I couldn't move. So I've been learning like how to tune a piano. It is not like tuning a guitar. There's way more strings and it's much more sensitive. But I mean, I don't know. So there's just like something about like doing things with your hands, but actually that AI has been helping me tune my piano. Mm-hmm. Right? It's kind of been talking through like, this is the right process you should take. Here is, you know, don't try to raise the pitch before you get the unisons and say like all this other stuff that I never would have thought of. And at first it told me like, hey, don't tune your piano. It's way harder than a guitar. Stop, call an expert. And I looked on Amazon as like a piano tuning kit. I'm like, how hard can it be? Yeah. And so I just like responded, I am the expert. It's like, oh, okay. And so then it's like, okay, you can do it. And it turns out it's not as crazy as it seems, or it's just time, not like anything hard. Yeah. So I don't know. So like getting back to like having more, like working with AI, and what was the thing that Jensen would always say, like even years ago, right, is like, AI won't take your job. People who use AI will, right? And so it's going to be people coming to work with you, or even like your teams coming and saying, hey, I can do all this stuff, right? We're almost like mini companies now, because we'll have a bunch of agents behind us doing right. all these things. You want help with marketing? Yeah. You want building an app? You want help with scaling something? We're going to have agents that can help with that, and then people who are experts in those fields. And then on top of that, they'll be even more expert because they'll have a group of agents and the use of AI to become like the superpower as opposed to whatever. So I think I think the surface area of like all of the experts or people who are really good at things gets much more, I guess it widens out. But it's also, a lot of times people would say like, if you know, you should always just go deep in one thing, but then you lose a lot of context, right? So there's a lot of, I'm sure you're familiar with a lot of really, really good programmers who are really good programmers, and kind of where it ends, right? And so now imagine you're a good programmer, but you're good with this other tech, or you're good with these other kind of skills. And the more you compound onto that, like the more unique you become, right? So it's kind of like your own niche, but you're then personal to like, I guess just, I don't know, you'll be able to find your true fans.
Yeah.
Probably much easier because you are very specific, and you'll be so niche down that the people who are actually looking for you will be able to find you better. And maybe that's another.
I like another it. I was just I'm in an AI business group, and it's very interesting because most of them, 60% of them, are probably not developers, but I feel like they're much more adoptive of AI than most programmers. I think what's kind of happened is many programmers have pushed it away because they see it as a threat.
Mm-hmm.
And so these guys who are often, they were like former internet marketers who often are the fastest to adopt technology that will make them money, are like crazy. And it's almost exhausting to read the group. I think I mentioned it last time, just kind of stay in touch with it because there's constantly stuff going on. But I mean, the neat thing is I'm learning about some of the latest stuff, you know, as it hits the fan. And so it was, you know, basically what I'd say is like, anyway, one of them was kind of talking about, you know, what if a coder decides to create like an artisanal app or something like that? Like what artisanal code could be a new journey for people. Of course, that's not where it is now, but it would be interesting to see if down the road there's any kind of an interest in a human developed app. I don't buy it personally, but I do think what you're saying is true. Like we're going to go back to the things we really do appreciate, which is art. I would appreciate artisanally created art versus AI art. I do appreciate artisanally created maybe soaps or something like that. There's always going to be that kind of market for that stuff. And maybe they'll, you know, but at the same time, there are things that just never, that don't make sense with that kind of world.
And well, if you think about this, okay, so compilers, right? Do you want artisanally created assembly language?
Yeah.
Because I mean, that's
no, that makes sense.
About here is like I build my own computer, sure, but like the computer knows how to run what it knows how to run, and so all of those things, like sure, you can have an artisanal app. Is that going to be kind of your thing? Like, well, sorry, there's bugs. It's artisanal. That's human in there, right? And so I think there's where we can tolerate things, like that's fine. But if you're But let's say it's an app, or you're hiking and you're using this map thing, and like your GPS library breaks, but it's artisanal, but you're trapped, like, or you don't know where to go. Right. And so I mean, there's like, there's certain things where we can handle that artisanal, but there's also certain things where like, maybe it doesn't make as much sense because even artisanal code, you're always going to be like way behind.
Absolutely.
So unless it's maybe a meditation app,
there's got to be a net benefit to the artisanal, and if there's not one,
yeah, you know, yeah,
it's, and maybe with soap, the net benefit is someone is thoughtfully watching every ingredient that goes into it, and it's beautiful the way they made it versus the machine, squirted a bunch of chemicals in there in a second.
And ideally, it's probably not kind of a mass produce. I've actually gotten this hydroxyapatite. So like the dentist I go to, I've started talking about kind of these different types of like ways you could brush your teeth with things. And started researching this stuff called hydroxyapatite, and you can't actually, it's a, I don't know if it's not a it's not like a supplement, or maybe it is similar to a supplement.
Is it a prescription?
You can't make claims with it.
Okay. But
it's something, so like in Europe, there's actually like this synthetic version of it or whatever that's very like precise that everybody wants to use. And so anyways, like it's just been kind of cool to see like how like a toothpaste gets put together.
Right? Yeah. So
like, if I'm trying to buy like organic or natural, and I thought the other part was, I thought I was doing something kind of good when I was using, because a lot of times my son, you know, he was little, he would just brush his teeth with me and he wanted to use my toothpaste. And so I started buying like toothpaste that didn't have fluoride or anything. If he did swallow, like it wouldn't be bad. But then finding out now, like the other stuff in those toothpaste were just as bad. And so it's like,
yeah, true.
And so now like thinking like, what do you need in a toothpaste, right? What do you need in a soap? What do you need in a deodorant? What are all those things? And that's where like that artisanal thing, that where people who believe what you believe or have kind of similar things, like here's the research we found, here's what we think is good, here's what we suggest, right? And they can fulfill that. And then again, like that's almost the signal to them that they're on the right path or they're not. Right? If you're going to try to make soap.
And in a way, maybe AI is allowing us, if you think about the artisanal stuff, like in a way, AI is now empowering people who don't have coding skills to create very personalized UI experiences in a way that wasn't possible before. You had to have a big, you could do it, a single programmer could create an app, but there were kind of so many, how much limitation, there's a fair amount of limitation to that, how complex it could be. Now it could be very complex and very unique and very customized.
And not even from an app perspective, right? If you think about, okay, so I'm thinking about getting into e-commerce for making my own toothpaste.
Cool. Right? Yeah.
And so this is actually the coolest part is, so just using various LLMs, right? Talk to me about this.
Yeah. Now
research this, right? Tell me what other, find the gaps in the market. And then taking it further, something like OpenClaw, you are my, buyer, right? Find other sites that have similar products that align with our values. Or first of all, let's build values. Right. Yeah. What is our company's mission? What is our values? And then find other companies that follow that. Then find some wholesalers that we can use for drop shipping until our companies start to take off or kind of blend in. Right. So there's now all of these other supporting functions that can really help, like even with how do I formulate a toothpaste? Right? Who do I talk to? A long time ago, maybe like 10 years ago, we tried making coffee. Actually, we tried making the K-cup coffee, like with with like, I think it was around the time like Lion's Mane was big. So we wanted to have like a K-cup with Lion's Mane, like all this stuff. But it was really a lot of, I called a lot of places and I talked to a lot of clients. It was really hard to like figure out all these things. And now with an LLM, you just ask, right? Perplex just goes out, finds it, ChatGPT, like they'll just go out and find it and say like, do this.
Right.
So now, like, you have kind of the runbook. You can then take that runbook, give it to another AI and say, is this right? And feed it back. So you now become, like, really, really, I guess, knowledgeable in the field. And you didn't do anything. So then even asking, like, is it easy? Is it worth getting into? Whatever. What's kind of the minimum cost? What are MOQs at suppliers? Like, I don't know. So it's just, like, super cool. Like, even outside the technology, like, you can become, like, a much better person, all these different,
I mean, if you look at AI with a lot, with less personalization, basically, if you don't take it personally, at its core, it's just aggregating a lot of information and able to present specific, and again, aggregate different sources and present specific things to the human in a very efficient way. That's effectively all it is. And if you kind of make it more than that and make it, and you personify it, that's where it starts to get scary. So I do have some thought I put some stuff in the Slack on the podcast topics that would be interesting. And I thought we could jump into any of these that look interesting for you. I haven't looked at the first one, the Saskopolis. Yeah, thank you. Dead. How? Do you know anything about that? The travel using market following the software still off.
Yeah, it's been. I think they even talked about it last week on the All In.
Okay.
It's.
Software, what do you know about it?
Right. I think the key is that some things, especially if you think about what all of the apps on your phone, and actually this probably stemmed from the creator of OpenClaw, that Peter guy, saying on a podcast, like, all apps are dead or whatever.
Oh, okay.
You won't need apps anymore or something. And there's truth to it. I think about, like, what's on my phone? Like, what am I using?
Yeah.
And ultimately now imagine having something kind of like, I mean, me handing my phone to, like, an AI. And then the AI is just, like, monitoring me or whatever. Right? If I'm eating this, it'll say, like, okay, I'm just going to add that. And then add it to my health stuff, whatever. And it's like, oh, maybe you've been eating too much of this. You should go see a doctor, or you should go to the gym more. Like, I'm going to update your calendar. Like, so all of those integrations with all of the things that we have. And so I think that the key is right now, like, we have so many, like, single purpose apps, and that philosophy of, like, do one thing and do one thing well.
Yeah.
It works. But now imagine, like, trying to tie in with all of the different apps that you have to, like, do a function. Or even if, let's say we want to schedule a podcast, right? So kind of what does that start? Like, first I need to, like, reach out to you on Slack, and then, or you reach out to me, and then we go figure out calendars. Like, okay, does this time work? All right, so then we're, like, going into Google, we're going into Slack, and then from there, are we going to use Zoom? So then we're going to go figure out, okay, now let's go schedule the event in Zoom, take that event, put it back to you. And then think of even something else. Like, then we want to talk about topics. What topics? Okay, I'm going to go look at X. I'm going to go just Google, Reddit, Hacker News, like, all these things, and then put that together in some other list. So it's more about the coordination of all this stuff. And I think that's I think J. Cal on, like, This Week in Startups, he started going through his, what he called Ultron, where he's going to have, he bought a bunch of Mac Minis or something, or Mac Studios.
Yeah, I got it. Okay. They're talking to each other.
They're going to take over his whole company of 20. And I think that is the, I don't know. So that's kind of where it's going is into things where you're consolidating a bunch of stuff, and, like, single purpose apps may no longer have purpose, right? It may be changing the paradigm of, like, how we think. Because even in programming, you think oftentimes, you know, some of the things that I have, there's maybe 10 different Git repositories.
Right.
And you're always trying to, like, you've been taught, like, keep it simple, each service does a thing. But now you kind of have to put all those together. Otherwise, the AI, if you're telling it, like, hey, I want to do this, it won't have all the information to see, like, oh, this service actually calls this service, which calls this service. So it'll start trying to, like, say, like, you're missing all these things, put it in. So, like, we're breaking a lot of patterns that we've had where, you know, we're, and I guess it's coming down to, like, the amount of input our brains. Right. And so everything has been designed for, like, our ease of use, our tiny little heads or whatever, like, all of the stuff that's now, you know, the AI, these GPUs, like, way bigger context windows than
whatever. I mean, it makes sense. I can see the argument made. I think what's the problem with the argument to me is that it's not taking it into account. Let's say you think of an LLM as just a super smart and more capable human brain. It has the flexibility to think about anything and aggregate information and make an argument. But it has access to unlimited knowledge at its fingertips and all that stuff. It'd be great. But if you think about what's the core problem of a human brain in terms of effectiveness and efficiency? Well, let's say you are, let's say that you have a human who's not allowed to have any access to something structural like a notebook. And you say to the human, hey, get up on stage and give a very clear lecture, but you can't use your notes. You can't usually be, you know, you can't use anything structural. You just have to wing it. And every time you have to wing it, well, the professor probably could get into a pretty good rhythm of winging it all the time. But would he or she forget things that are important for that class? Probably. Each time it might even come out differently, and he might completely lose entire sections. And so if the premise is that an LLM will not need an app because an app is old school, my kind of counter to that would be an LLM might still need structures, just like a human benefits structures like paper and a notebook. Like when were we able to, as humans, pass down generational information from one generation to the next without writing? Yes, we were. We did it through stories. That's how the human brains kind of like learned about the past, was through stories. The problem is those stories end up being probably full of a lot of crap, because in order to make them memorable and interesting, you had to kind of be, you know, exaggerated about certain things. So you have these very exaggerated myths of like humans interacting with super beings and stuff. And you know, maybe that happened, or maybe that was just kind of like,
well, and then out,
you know, it basically like distortion of information. When writing came, it allowed humans to be a lot more, because it was a structural, allowed humans to become more accurate. So I would say LLMs still need some, I would say, guardrails. I think apps and software that is limited could actually contain and make a better version of an LLM, even 100 years from now.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that is an interesting take, right? I think at the root of it, we do need some harness, right? Something to control it all. And that's where I think the talk was, if you're this app, do you want to be giving away your data? And so instead of every app building their own MCP or building all this other crap, you should make your app literally just be API driven. And then that way anything can consume it. So instead of being we're kind of the walled garden or kind of the locked in area, like you're able to let all your stuff go. But I think that then it's a risk for a lot of companies, or I think they actually see it as a risk, but it's probably like, I would support a company that is way more open than one that we're going to lock you in. Right. I mean, think about even Notion, right? When you want to move that, you're going to be able to like export your data. You're going to be able to do all this stuff. And it may not be perfect because it adheres to like their structure, but still you're going to be able to get your data back. But if you were in some system where you couldn't, like that's pretty cool. And then, or when you have, when you have to pay to get your data back. So like this stuff happened for, I think this was at 37 Signals, why they like brought some of their stuff back on-prem was like the AWS storage fees coming back.
Oh, wow.
So there's like all of these things that we may not be thinking of initially, but they can hit us. And then kind of on the other side too, is like when we think about stuff, right? When we remember a story, it's because the story is memorable.
Right.
But there may also be like very important things. Like actually, I was talking to my neighbor the other day when we were putting out these shelters for the animal. And he's like, you need to make sure that the opening faces the south or like whatever. And so I'm like, well, why? Like, what does that matter? And he's like, I don't know. He's like, my dad just always said that. And so there's like these things that like you're learning.
There may be something that's very important there, but it wasn't.
Yeah, he wasn't. Yeah. But he did know, like, anytime I stand up a barn, anytime I do this, like, the entrance has to face there. And so I've been prepping for, I'm getting some bees. And in there, like, even kind of talking about, like, how to set up their hives, it's like, face the, you know, the opening, face the south. Right. So there's, like, all this interesting stuff. And then, I asked ChatGPT, and it kind of gave me the reasons why. But
there were reasons.
Yeah. So it was legit. I'm like, is he just, because a lot of the stuff you hear is like, that weird, like.
Could be an old wives.
Exactly. And so now you're able to kind of fact check that, like, here's why it matters. But also at the same time, there's just stuff that like you're going to lose over time.
Yeah.
So thinking about, you know, the way, like, I don't know, just even like historically, like what did your like recipes and all that other stuff? I mean, you could write those down, of course.
Yeah.
But unless it was like really memorable, like, you know, my grandmother would always throw 3 mice in the spaghetti sauce to make it. Like, unless it was something so wild that you would just remember, like, you're not going to remember, like, she used this much salt and basil, whatever.
Interesting.
So I'm trying to think
right now, like, I can, as we think about an app, traditionally an app that will be easily replaced. Okay. I'm trying to think of something that's like obvious. I mean, note taking seems still important. I'm trying to think, like, what's a big target in terms of the app world that would be easily replaced by
I think CRMs. Right, that's okay. The thing that everybody's talking about. Oh, Salesforce, right? Salesforce, you're not going to vibe code. I mean, there's also like the other side to it is there's distribution. There's all these things like people want it. And but this is where I think the death by a thousand cuts could happen is that, let's say I'm a gym owner or I'm a whatever, certain type of business, like a artisan candle maker, and I need a CRM just for me. So now that's what's going to come down to is building that CRM. Like, I don't need everything Salesforce has. I don't need everything Salesforce has. I want something that does this and then keeps track of maybe my inventory.
Sure.
Right. I actually met a guy who was doing a very similar thing. Like, he's building not for candles, but like he's building a CRM that kind of does a lot of things.
Got it.
So I think there's value to that now where you can start taking all of this stuff and making it all in one and all in one good enough specific niche, right? You don't need like all this crazy reporting out of Salesforce if you're just trying to sell candles and need to know like where is the next candle event or how much money did I make from this event? And then on top of it, having AI going through and analyzing your sales and whatnot, like, oh, from Shopify, you sold this much after you went to this event, right? And so that's where it has like other data. Your calendar shows you going to this event.
Yeah.
And then you bought a bunch of business cards. So now I'm going to kind of infer that like you probably did something to like sell this stuff where I saw your flyers at this event. And now your Shopify sales went up this much, right? So imagine like having that kind of a thing or your ads didn't convert, but I found another person who was at that same candle level as you. And they sold 10x, and here's what their ads look like. Here's what they're doing, right? Yeah. So now you have this kind of genius. It's not even a CRM. It's just like this. I don't know what you would call it, but like kind of this all-encompassing sort of agent that gives you all the data that you can then take. But it has to get from like all these. It has to get data from like all the different places, and so that it just kind of.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing you say, I can't see almost any solid app right now that I think AI could do a better job without the app. What I mean by that is what makes a CRM useful is trust. I can trust that the data structure is so accurate and precise that if I wanted to look up one of my clients and say, where do they work? I don't have to wonder if the result that came back is a hallucination because I know that the CRM's job is to make it trustworthy and clear and precise every time. And so what I don't want is to just dump a big text file of customer data and all their metadata into a LLM and say, just hold this for me. Right. And when I ask about it, give it to me. And then one day I ask about what John does and he's a carpenter. And the next time, a week later, I ask what he does and he's a veterinarian, but it's the same name otherwise, or the same, everything else is the same. It's like, I want to make sure that there's such integrity that I think of CRM. I can't imagine a day where I can just trust the LLM because LLMs are better now. Like, even so, they're built on the same principle as a human brain. And we know human brains are shitty at precision. So why would an LLM get to a point where it's good? It may happen. And maybe the combination of adding structure to an LLM is going to be that. And maybe that's the new app. But there's still, to me, a value in that app being able to serve clear, trustworthy data. And so I just don't see an app that I can think of. Like, first, if someone, I was at a conference and the super like hyped up, he looked like he was doing code. He was like Mr. AI. And he was like, and he had no coding experience, by the way. So he was Mr. Know-it-all. And he's like, oh, you work with WordPress? WordPress is dead. It's dead. AI is going to change. And I was just like, okay, but what is WordPress? WordPress is basically, it makes a website. What's a website? If you think about it, it's very, very core. A website for you or a company is basically just a piece of canvas, blank canvas, that someone can look at and learn about what you do and maybe a little functionality. But at its core, it's just a blank piece of paper that you write. Here's what I do. It's like a sign. So if that is what WordPress is, will WordPress change dramatically due to AI? Yeah. But could WordPress still be valuable as a sign? Maybe the new version of WordPress with AI, with MCP means involved, is that every time a user goes to your WordPress, And the WordPress can detect who you are. Perhaps there's some way that in real time, the WordPress site could create the header tailored to you, the user, based on what it knows about you or something like that. Maybe that's a hypothetical. But yeah, it's going to be a WordPress site.
Your IP is in this range. You were just right. By a hurricane. Like, do you need help?
Exactly. Right. You seem to be from Kazakhstan. Maybe here's services that we can help you or what, you know, what, like you're saying. Still, though, there's still that structure of a blank canvas that you can either use WordPress or Squarespace or nothing at all, or you have your own server. But either way, there's just a better version of WordPress, not a replacement. I don't see the replacement of something.
It's not changing the fundamental component of showing something when you go to the website.
Yeah, yeah.
On the flip side, right, WordPress is dead. PHP is dead. Right? I mean, it's not, and that's kind of the funny thing, is it still dominates the internet, right? It still dominates all the stuff. So even if you think it's dead, even if you think there's other languages, think about what LLMs have been trained on. Think about all of this knowledge that's out there. And I think even DHH goes over it for Rails. Who's still using Rails? The people who really know it, but it's right. Because it's been around for so long that there is all of this experience. There is all this expertise. I mean, there's just so much stuff out there, right? Now, maybe today it's not the hot thing because of, Torch and all these other Python things that people love to do for websites, but it's still very valid. And I think what is the stats? WordPress runs how many of the websites on the internet?
Yeah, 40% or so.
Yeah. There's a very large amount. And then how many of those, the other percentage are just derivatives of WordPress.
Right.
From the PHP thing, right? So it's still very much. And so sure, you can say it's dead. A lot of things are dead. We're still using them.
Yeah. PHP was supposed to be dead at least 15 years ago, and it's still coming back. But I think you're right. It's because if you said to an LLM or a group of LLMs, create the perfect language, and let's say they iterated and a year later, maybe that's too long, but maybe a month later, they come up with a perfect language and they had no ability to look at previous languages and how-tos and stuff like that. They just had to figure it all out. They probably would end up with something similar to one of the current human languages. It may be vastly improved and more efficient, but humans have slowly evolved these languages through basically improving here. Oh, we need this structure. We need that. We need this to do. They probably would end up with something similar, and then they could iterate on that. So, what's the benefit? They can probably just take one of our current languages or a bunch of them and make a new language, but it still rests on the backbone of what we created, because those are physically helpful and mathematically helpful things that we discovered. Yeah.
Well, and would they be? So, I guess that's the other thing too. Is if you think about, I think last week we were talking about building. What is a programming language for an LLM or for AI, right? As these things start to build, even for computers, right? We humans came up with how we think it should work.
Yeah.
But what do the computers think? And how do they work? I mean, working in tokens, so there's a bunch of weird stuff that is really interesting to start thinking through is I think it's true, we are the limiting factor for these, but we are also the enabling factor at the same time, right? What we're providing, our original thought, who would have thought of putting ice cream in a cone? When if you wanted ice cream, you just eat ice cream, right? All of this stuff at the state fair, they dip Snickers in corn dog batter or something, what the hell? But again, these are things that an LLM probably, despite how good they are at hallucinating, wouldn't come up with these sort of things that humans do.
Interesting.
So that's the other side to it. And then even the aspirations. An LLM doesn't think man, I want to get really good at this. I'm going to start a company. I'm going to hire a bunch of people. I'm going to change the world. Yeah. An LLM just kind of, you ask, it answers. And I think that's the sort of this really nice human element. But at the same time, we've got to figure out what's the right bridge for us. And I think the answer is it's not more technology. It's probably less technology. What can we take away to simplify this? Because a lot of the stuff that we've built because it's hard for us to memorize things or to remember certain stuff. So when we're doing all these things, it's just a lot more, it's a lot more complicated for us to have.
Totally.
Managing multiple systems, whereas the LLM it doesn't matter. It's just
data. I think it's all symbology. If you think about, I think this is where it gets very philosophical, is if you think about what language is, and why we are different than animals, let's say, we are using symbols to represent the outside world effectively. And so if you look, it's very interesting. If you look at the alphabet, like where the like English alphabet came from, there's cool, some cool videos about this. Like if you trace it all the way back, it kind of comes from like the, you know, ancient Babylon and ancient Sumeria and some of all this stuff.
Interesting. And yeah.
Effectively, letters are represent are symbols for like fence, or, you know, like there's one that's like, I can't remember what letter it is, but it's like fence, stick, house, dog, you know, or horse. And then you kind of slowly these evolve into letters. And then we take these letters and we make more symbols out of them, kind of, you know, more complex and stuff. But if you kind of think where this is all coming from, like we are using language to represent basically like a 3D imagined world in our brains. And we're interacting with the world through a filter called language, which is sometimes why we screw it up, why we think, oh, you did this, and the other person doesn't see it that way, or they think an event happened, and the two people think, oh,
or because it was different language, right. Then I interpret that when I'm saying the word, Kevin, you're great, but I'm flicking you off at the same time.
Yeah.
It's a little conflicting, but right. If somebody just listened to the podcast and they didn't see me flicking you off, they'd be like, oh,
yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, they're like, is he flicking him off, right? So there's like all that other stuff, or even the tone.
Sure. Yeah.
And now it's just a token. The letter is there's no tone, right? You don't know if that. I mean, you can try like uppercase, but you don't know if.
Absolutely. A lot of distortion, I would say. But at the same time, how could you create a combustion engine as an animal with no symbols and no understanding of how the world works? It would be very difficult to theorize something very complex without language. Language just gives you the ability to take the world, which is to an animal, the world is just this one kind of blob that they're interacting, and there's some kind of like feedback on different things. But with the human mind is able to take it and break it up into little pieces, and then take those different pieces in their brains, thanks to the symbols, and then create different ideas and amalgamate them and put them together and have them react in their brains, and then try it out in nature and see if it works or if it doesn't. And that's what I'd say, like, because LLMs are basically based on language, the idea that they can just bypass language and create a programming language without it, I think is not true. I think they're going to need to create something, but they won't need, as, like you say, they won't need a function that has the function name in very clear symbols like we need it. They'll be able to just do a very...
Yeah. Upper. Like it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Exactly. So it'll be much more efficient, but I don't think it'll be, I think it'll still be symbolically based.
You know, yeah, I guess you're right. Because if they are trained on that, right, they're still at the root of it. It is still as human.
Yeah. Like
at the root of all of this, it still comes down to human.
Yeah. So if you want that consistency too, if you want to make sure that the function is acting the same way every time, you have to have some symbols in there that are consistent, you know. But otherwise, it's going to go haywire.
Yeah, that's the tricky part, right? Because they're by design they're non-deterministic, right? Mm-hmm. So you're looking for a consistent deterministic sort of approach,
right,
to some process that wasn't made to do that. And I think actually that's what a lot of people are using LLMs for. They're using them for the wrong things, where they want to say we're AI, but instead of rethinking about it, just like, how can I have it do this one thing, but have the LLM give us the command to run or whatever?
Right.
And it's like, that doesn't matter, right? Like you're thinking about this the wrong way, or there's maybe more to do, or maybe, you know what, you don't need AI, right? Like, and it's totally okay to say that, right? Like your tool could be consumed by AI. Right? And I think that's what you're talking about, like even with the Salesforce stuff, right? You want to have a CRM you trust. It doesn't need to have AI. It doesn't need to do all this other stuff. Like you can have something outside that just consumes that. So it's okay to not be AI. I guess maybe that's the to be the tagline for the episode. It's okay to not be AI.
It's okay to not be AI or not make something useful. I'm starting to become more excited about the future of SaaS. I think it's just the traditional version of SaaS where you could make some gimmicky kind of like function and sell that for $10 a month, that part is dead. But I actually think that there's so much potential in new apps that it's going to be very exciting. But this does lead to my second one, which I put on there, which is, no, third one, which is there was a cool, interesting blog post by AppSumo's founder, Noah Kagan, the other day that came out. I'll try to put it in the show notes, or we'll have AI do it. Basically, it was related to the fact that AppSumo has seen a 50% reduction in their revenue in the past 2 years. And he had a long list of why he thought that was the case. He, obviously, mostly AI. But the reasons were interesting. One of the reasons that was kind of counterintuitive isn't that people are not using apps anymore. One of the bigger reasons I had, like, number two or three, was that developers aren't even finishing their apps anymore. So I mean, like, wow. He's like, it's so easy to start an app now, but the commitment level you have towards that app is vastly lower than it was before AI. If you think about, like, okay, I'm going to build an app, I'm a solo developer, I'm going to build an app that is an add-on to a CRM or whatever like that, and you work and you're like, you know, or I build like a course thing. I started my online course platform before AI, you know, came into the picture. I was so dedicated to this app. It took so long to develop the first version. Mm-hmm. You're not just going to give up on it after 6 months to a year of getting that MVP off the ground. You are dedicated. You're going to make this work now.
Yeah.
And you've been thinking about it. It's all in your head all the time. Now I can make that MVP in a week, but by the time that week is over, I've seen three other shiny new objects and I'm not even sure if I want to do it anymore. I'm more excited about the next one. And so I started with that one, and then a week goes later and I've kind of given up on that one too. And now I have about 12 open projects that I've started that are pretty kind of mature, but they're maybe 80-90% mature to the MVP instead of 100. And that last 10% is always the hardest. The 5% is always the hardest to get to the MVP that actually is cool and actually works. Yeah. And I just don't have the time or interest anymore. And I'm not actually an entrepreneur anyway. I just thought of it, had an idea. And so it is interesting how that plays into it. Is are you actually seeing more apps being published than before? Maybe, but is it vastly more, or is it just a little bit more because people are just flaking out? You know, I don't know.
Well, that's the other side to it, right? I mean, like, when you think about, like, so you were committed, right? I mean, you were in this, and a lot of there's a certain thing to it, right? And it's, I guess it comes down to like your level of delusion, right? Everybody told all this stuff is crazy. But eventually, like, it just works out, right? And so you're kind of in the same thing where you know it will work. And so now it's not so much about, like, will it work? It's just a matter of, like, how do I do it? Like, what are the things I need to keep trying? And so I think that's the difference between somebody, especially, like, a kind of a non-programmer. They go into this and they're like, I need an app. I'm making a to-do list app, right? Okay. Yeah. So I get it, deploys it in Vercel on Supabase. And then it's like, okay, how do I use Stripe? Okay, how do people pay for it? Okay, right. So my Stripe API key is in my front end code embedded. It's weird. And
that's a secret.
But like, things like that do happen where people start storing like their keys in the front end because they're not familiar with it. But then now, how do I scale? Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, when two users use the system at the same time, they see the same data. Oh, so I need like multi-tenancy. And so there's just like a number of things that then start to come up, like, what does that mean? And I think when you get into this for a course thing, like, you're not thinking like, I'm going to build the perfect course software that everybody can use, because just one username and password is going to exist for the app. So you're going to log in, you're going to see everybody else's content, and you can all work together. Like, this is called internet collaboration. Exactly. It's gonna be a Wikipedia of courses. And it's not, yeah, so there's like a, it's good because there's this concept of showing an MVP instead of a slide. Nothing gets somebody's attention. Like, you know, I was thinking about doing this idea. Here it is.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of times they'll show up to a meeting and say, here it is. And then they're like, well, I don't know if that'll work. We got to do all this other stuff.
Right.
Good point. The MVP saying, here it is. Look at, here's the API, like all this stuff. That sells.
It's a demo, basically, of a real app, and they can't say, well, that's going to take too much time to build or whatever like that.
Yeah, exactly, right. And so, I mean, that's the key. I think that was the thing I learned it from the girl at Anthropic. I think Kat was her name. She basically said, like, we want you to like show us with like a demo instead of slides.
Got it. Nice.
And so that's kind of the thing is.
Yeah, and I think that is the the way I kind of thought about it, because I come from the online course world, is everyone's like, oh, well, you know, AI's here. Now everyone can build an app. There's no the program is no longer a moat. Anyone can build an app and become the next Zuckerberg. The problem is people are lazy and mostly don't like to finish hard stuff. So before AI ever came about, you could say to somebody, you know, people make millions of dollars building online courses. Why don't you just make an online course? The technology to make an online course before AI was amazingly good. You could do it. You could film yourself. You could upload it. And within, you know, a week or two, you could have an online course. And yet, what's the reality? Before AI was ever created, most people failed at making online courses. They even if they made it, then they failed to market it. And they failed to make very much money. And there's there's gazillions of dead online courses in the cemetery of the online course platforms that never made it out the door. And even though there was no moat to, you know, that stopped them from making an online course, it's super easy, they still failed at it. So just because you now have removed the moat of software coding does not mean that everyone's going to be the next Zuckerberg. It's going to be just as hard to pay attention, to do the hard work of actually marketing it and actually get it out the door and then see if people want it or not. All that work is still there. And it's just as, you know, the only thing that's changed is that now it's a little easier, but the level of failure to me is going to be the same. The rate of failure will probably be the
same. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to is like you still have to be committed to what you're building, right? And even understanding, and I guess this is the coolest part about, you know, using AI, right? If I want to learn all about toothpaste, like I can learn like so much about toothpaste and become an expert, but I have to actually want to become that, right? I have to actually like find it so interesting that I'm willing to do all sorts of stuff. And still, again, willing to invest that time, that money, because it is headspace, right?
Oh, So I have a plugin that I've developed 4 months ago. It took me 2 hours to develop, and it's still sitting there waiting for me to do something with it. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get around to that. It will take me another 30 minutes to finish it and get it. And why has it been 4 months? I mean, this is a problem with too many options now and too much. It's very powerful, but there's also a downside.
So this is the other part, though, is could you make an agent, even like an OpenClaw kind of setup where it will go and do that?
Right? That's probably a good idea.
It will take that finishing piece, or at least it'll figure out like what's left. Like, so if you have your PRD or if you have your spec, it'll go through and say, okay, these steps are left. I'll do them. And then you confirm like, okay, is it good or bad? And then it's like, okay, if it's good, click here to publish. Right. So like it kind of gives you all of that stuff. So it does those pieces you don't want to do.
Yes.
But then it helps you get to the end.
I hope so. I hope you're right. I think you're probably right. The question is, I think with AIs too, is that they don't have any particular incentive or interest to do something like that, right? They don't care about the outcome as much as a human does, at least right now. And until
you have to steer it and kind of guide it, right?
You do have to steer it,
Like harness around it is your goal, your job is to ensure that I complete what I am going to complete.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah.
When it sees your tasks and it's like, why isn't this done? It's been more eventually, like it has like an escalation procedure. Where, like it starts to like email your wife, hey, tell Kevin you better get this done, or you know, whatever.
You're gonna do these tasks, you're not doing it. Yeah. Have you been using the OpenClaw, by the way?
So I've been using it for a couple weeks, mostly just like inside of Slack.
Okay.
And so to talk to it. And admittedly, like it hasn't been working as well as it should. And I think I was actually talking about this yesterday with people, is that I'm intentionally kind of not giving it all the free reign.
You're a smart person who knows the risk of security. But
and so what I have here is I'm going to have it use one of my local LLMs and then just kind of use it. Like, I know I won't get as good of a response, but just I'm kind of like understand like what all it's going to be getting. And so then I'm going to start sharing it in Slack and just people can, because I want it to be able to like spawn up new agents inside of Slack for whatever that task is.
Yeah.
And each of those agents get better at that thing.
Okay. I was thinking about this from a security point of view. What I was thinking of doing was giving it access to our business, maybe Obsidian when I get it up and running, like maybe I'll give it access to our Obsidian business document, not personal documents, which I don't really care. They're not proprietary or anything like that. They're mostly just, you know, stuff we've created within. Even if that was all public and information, or even if it was made public by it, they decided to create a website full of it and make it public. I'm like, okay, it's not the end of the world. And then in terms of like being able to have it access and do research online, that's totally accessible. You know, that'd be very helpful to have it. And then even if I had given it, you know, what I was thinking, maybe I could give it API or MCP access to our email server, which actually I self-host. And if I made a special email account for it and then gave it certain API limitations so that it couldn't send without approval, or I only could create drafts of stuff. And so it's not just going around emailing everybody. It's like, okay, I've created 10 email drafts for you, please review. Then I think you could actually build some guardrails or whatever to make it useful, but also not limit it too much, you know?
Or even just drop in your Obsidian, like here's some suggested emails.
Right? Yeah. There.
Yeah, I think that's a... I think it's very powerful. And even some of those things, though, there's already, so a long time ago, there was a big thing that I think blew up for like LinkedIn, where people were using N8N when N8N was what everybody talked about. Essentially, they had N8N, like read your email, get LinkedIn stuff, and then draft a response. And then you would just like either edit it or respond. I think I actually used Slack. And that's where.
Okay.
So you could edit the response in Slack. And then just hit like thumbs up and it would just send it. So I think there's something
there. Still using N8N, by the way. Are you finding that CloudBot is now a replacement for N8N, or are you still using N8N?
No, I think what I've really been thinking about is CloudBot helps you kind of prototype, right? So like, for example, if you're like what you would just talk about, I want to go through our business stuff. I want to do this. I want to then see like maybe we should be working on these things or find out like, is this niche still alive? Where should we spend our time?
Got it.
Right? And so then in that case, like it's going to go through and do a bunch of things. And in some cases, it's going to build its own things to do those things. And I'm sure you've hit this with LLMs plenty of time where you have one bug or you want to do one thing. Like I want to change the name of this function. And it like rewrites all the code. And then something breaks. And then something else to fix that thing it broke, and then it's off. And then like before you know it, your app that was supposed to be like a web-based MP3 player is now like a SaaS for a tire company. And all you want to do is change the name of a function. Right.
Yeah.
So there is that kind of thing. But aside of that, you'll be able to start figuring out like, okay, it's going to do this.
Yeah.
After then you would put together some kind of production type of flow. Where you then have those harnesses to make sure that you're checking all this stuff. So I think I think it's good prototype. And then again, it's like vibe coding agents.
Right. One thing, I mean, I don't know if you've tried this, but one thing I've been really liking is there's that N8N MCP project out there. Have you tried that? Basically, I'll send the link to you, but basically you can grab it. And then you basically just tell your Claude code or your, I'm using CleanA, which is kind of giving me the ability to do this in Visual Studio with Gemini, is I just create a project folder. I just say, okay, here's the GitHub project. Connect this to my N8N server, which I personally host. And then I just give it an API key to the server. And then basically it's been building new workflows and fixing broken workflows like really well. That's been kind of fun. So it creates... So I've been, you know, here's what I want. I'll describe what I want. Can you build this workflow? It'll build like the first version. And it's not always like perfect, but I will say that like it'll basically test the workflow, find the errors, and fix them quite quickly. And now once I have the N8N workflow that I like, I don't have to rely on an LLM trying to do a task over and over again. And sometimes it changes it. And sometimes it
decides
to go a different way. It's consistent and it's efficient, but it is building it in the first time well. So that's kind of been fun.
Yeah, I should try that. I mean, I did try to go through and have Claude or Codex or whatever, like build me flows, but
like a JSON?
They never worked.
Yeah, like the JSON ones will kind of create, but because it doesn't have the ability to test it, MCP can actually run the test and then figure out why it's not working.
Yeah, I never gave it access or anything. So I think that's probably the secret to like all of this. It's like,
yeah.
And I think that is what even like for Claude Code, right? Like Boris always says, like, if you tell it to build you a website, but it can't see the website, yeah, it's not going to know. And so I think that's the...
Yeah,
that's,
same with the like the workflows. Like it'll create the file, like create something to work from, but you still have to go through and all the tedious testing. But now I do feel like it's getting there where it can actually test it and it's getting further. So I'm not saying it's perfect, but I do like, I still like N8N. And I think it's kind of funny and sad that N8N is like, oh, the old days 3 months ago when everyone was into N8N and are now moved on. But I still think there's something to structure.
Well, they'll go back to it, right? I mean, you cannot success. I guess I don't want to say like super generalized, but to be successful, right? Like you have to, especially if you're a business, you have to be able to rely on what's happening.
Yeah.
Like if you're having OpenClaw do something, like that's cool that it does that and it shows you how to do it. But that should be kind of the blueprint then that you take for how to implement this. And actually the end result is saying, okay, OpenClaw, make this like repeatable process in N8N.
Oh, good point. Yeah. And, like, that's a good one. You give it access to your N8N server and it can just build workflows for you to repeat over and over again.
Because I was going to build a VM and then let it have full access. So I typically run it just in containers.
Yeah.
And so that creates issues because a lot of times the services, like if I don't start the container with no explicitly saying what service is going to come out, or if I don't run it like in a certain privilege mode, it just breaks stuff. But so I have to be very explicit about what I'm running. But if I just give it a VM and I let it run whatever it wants, then at that point, I will log into Slack. I will give it an account. I'll make it an admin in Slack and then let it like start doing its thing. And then maybe even the same thing for N8N. I'll log in and then let it take over, let it do all those things and then figure out what to do. And at least then it's still isolated. Because what I want to really get it to do is my QuickBooks.
Yeah.
So that's what bookkeeper. I want to do my QuickBooks. So
that.
So the accountant thinks like I'm really cool. And then I'll try to get the accountant to hire me and I'll really have it be open.
And then you have another project to do that you have to watch and oversee. Yeah. Well, cool. I have a meeting pretty soon at the 15-minute mark. So I probably will bow out here, but this has been fun just catching up about this stuff and philosophizing as always.
Like always.
All right, sir. I will, and I think what we'll do is I'll push this out to YouTube. I think I created a YouTube channel for us, so I'll push it out to YouTube, and then I'll upload it to PodMagic as well. And that's been working great, by the way. So let's talk. I'd like to hear kind of updates next time about how that's going, if you have anything new on that. And otherwise, it's a great platform. I really like it.
Awesome. Yes, PodMagic.com. Podcast needs.
Any last words?
Follow us on X, hit us up on podcast.
Sounds good. All right. We'll see you next time.
All right. Take it easy, Kevin.
All right. Take care. Bye.